Hi, this is Todd Gleason. If you haven't yet picked up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference, don't wait. Do it right now at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, or 800-898-1065. We're in our fourth year of this signature Will Ag Illinois public media event, and it will be another good one. We'll take up the Farm Bill, the price of farmland, conservation management practices, and how they can be benchmarked into your operation, all at the Farm Assets Conference next Tuesday. From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. I'll tell you how to get your tickets for not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday's Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. If you haven't bought them yet, you've got time. Make sure that you do that today at farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. We'll also talk today with Todd Hubbs. He'll be at the conference. Kurt Kimmel will be too, to talk about the commodity markets. Todd will take us through last week's USDA report and what that 175.4 bushel to the acre really means as it relates to the total carryout for corn in the United States and how much demand has to carry that weight through the coming year. And we'll do all of that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. We appreciate you being with us.
Well, good. Good afternoon, Todd.
I hope you're looking forward to coming over to the Farm Assets Conference. Actually, not very far for you to have to travel there in Bloomington Normal next Tuesday. And we hope to have you and a whole bunch of other folks on hand with us.
Boy, it's a great event. You always have a good crowd there. Looking forward to being part of that, Todd.
And those folks who want to be part of it should get their tickets today, willag.org, farmassetsconference.com. I like it better when there are higher prices as opposed to lower prices when we're going into one of these conferences. However, we were down pretty sharply again today for the soybeans in particular. This happened on Thursday of last week, and then we sort of held on Friday after the USDA World Agricultural Supply numbers showed a bigger global number for soybeans and oil seeds, and then today we're down again. Why was that the case?
Well, explaining this is like a hot potato. It's being tossed around. Nobody wants to talk lower prices, but fallout from the numbers from last week for not really providing a real bullish background worldwide, particularly. Started the process. Then, two, we're seeing Asia, particularly China, slow down the crushing process and maybe talk a little bit of GMO beans kind of going down that route for a while. But I think it's strictly to propped up some prices in their own country. They're not going to just stop buying beans, period. They're on a schedule. They have to ship so many million metric tons, just like clockwork. When the export shipments report this morning, we did see that we shipped out another 2 million metric tons of beans. So, I think that's just news item there to justify a little bit of a negative price action. South America, Brazil continues to receive some timely rains. They're over 50% planted now. The short-term forecast is negative as the weather forecast is cooperating in Brazil and in Argentina at the present time. Probably the biggest indicator was the commodity funds. They sold over 6,000 contracts going into the midday. This afternoon numbers are probably going to be a little higher than that, but what we saw there last week on crop report day, the market made a new high and closed lower. So that was a fairly good hook reversal. When we did close there last Thursday, we did close below the uptrend line that we had intact since the first part of August. Oftentimes, traders will give the market about two chances to get back above that trend line. If it does not do that, then they approach that as a negative result of the price performance. And what we saw was some fairly aggressive sell stops just under the lows we made 2 weeks ago. So breaking the trend line, breaking moving averages, and breaking old support generates some fairly good technical sell action here today. next support's about 3-4 cents below where we close. Then that's about 50% back down to the low we made in August. So that's going to be the key here, is try to trade a little lower tonight and get a good old-fashioned turnaround Tuesday here for a day.
And for corn?
Corn just continues to be kind of in the back burner here. I would have expected beans being down so hard that corn and wheat should have been up. They seem to like that spread, buying beans, selling corn, or else selling beans, vice versa, back and forth. But the whole complex was just heavy. When you look at the report last week, we just got a lot of corn around and a lot of corn to eat through. When you look forward in through here, yes, we could probably raise exports a little bit more, raise ethanol a little bit more, raise feed a little bit more. But it's going to take smaller acres or crop production problem here or somewhere in the world here in the next year to really get the market fundamentally back on track here to try to get going to the upside. Technically, corn did not hold the old lows, and so it puts it in position to sort of maybe drift lower and through here. We are a little bit oversold. We're in a situation where we have some cyclical lows coming due. And also, too, you're probably going to start hearing the old adage that the bears get Thanksgiving, the bulls should have Christmas.
All right. Hey, we'll find out, and we'll talk with you more next Tuesday, not tomorrow, but the following one at the Farm Assets Conference. Thanks so much.
Very good. Take care.
And, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with the Farm Bill in Washington, D.C., where House Ag Chairman Mike Conaway says he wants to move the 2018 Farm Bill through committee sometime in January or February, but that opponents of the Farm Bill and status quo thereof have been prepping since 2014 for the battle that happens after that point in the full House and the Senate. Those opponents of the status quo include conservative and taxpayer watchdog groups targeting subsidies, and that's been their long game as an effort to pull Washington's tentacles from every corner of the economy. For liberals and environmental advocates, reforming farm subsidies is a strategy for chipping away at existing farm policy, which they argue favors large operations and can harm the environment. Of course, it remains to be seen how much common ground those two very different coalitions of strange bedfellows can find, and whether there will be real policy reforms that come from it. The other big piece of agricultural news for the day, and you've probably already heard about this, on the peripheries of President Trump's travels through Asia, the TPP-11, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, sans the United States. The 11 remaining members of the Trans-Pacific Partnership on Saturday took a big step toward putting the agreement in place without the U.S., but in the words of the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, there's still more important work to be done. Led by Japan, the TPP-11 trade ministers issued a joint statement Saturday outlining their plan for bringing the deal into force under the new name of Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. That includes a list of 20 provisions that would be suspended now that the United States is no longer part of the pact. Notably, no agricultural commitment appears on the list. But the documents also referred to four more issues that must be resolved before countries are ready to sign the revised accord. Those include an issue on state-owned enterprises related to Malaysia, a commitment on coal affecting Brunei, a dispute settlement provision involving trade sanctions connected with Vietnam, and a cultural exception issue related to Canada. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Todd Hubbs, agricultural commodity specialist from the U of I, is here to take up his latest pennings for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can find them there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and see him a couple of times out with me over the next 7 days. Thursday evening, we'll be down in southern Illinois. Look up on the calendar of our events, our outlook down there, and then next Tuesday we'll be in Bloomington Normal for the Farm Assets Conference. First, thanks for traveling with me for those two events. I appreciate that.
I love getting out and meeting people. So bring your tough questions and I'll dodge them. So I like getting out and seeing farmers.
So. Okay, so let's talk about not dodging some tough questions. Last week, USDA released the crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates for the month of November. It surprised the commodity markets big time with the corn number and the corn yield in particular. The weights of the corn, according to Joe Persaki, I talked to him last week, he's with USDA down in their St. Louis office and does the weights, said we just didn't have many in the month of October really sound weights, or a lot of samples, and once we got a lot of samples in for the November estimate, things changed pretty dramatically.
It was a huge number. I was surprised. I expected the corn yield to go up, but you know, to be outside the pre-estimate range, you know, that's a huge number. What was it, 3.6 bushels for the national corn yield change from October to November, which really, I mean, puts us in a position where supply are weighing down the possibility of a corn price move for the foreseeable future. I mean, right now, 17-18 ending stocks are projected to be above 2.4 billion bushels. Despite the fact that they raised feed and residual 75 million and export 75 million in the November report, which there's no real reason to do either one of those in particular from the data we've seen thus far. I can see where you can say, you know, moving forward, livestock industry inventories are going up. Maybe corn prices are a little lower. We can see some more feeding, but I mean, it's a huge number. Looking at corn prices, thankfully, it was sort of a muted response in the market to this big number. I mean, prices went down, but they're just in the low 340s, you know, for January futures price. So it wasn't a catastrophic drop, but this huge supply number is going to be hanging over the market probably until spring, until we start talking about acreage next year and, you know, maybe some weather events later in the spring.
Yeah, so you went through some of that process. So despite the fact that USDA now says we're at, what, 175.4 on the average yield and 14.6 billion bushels worth of crop production, that was up 300 million from October, they did increase the consumption. And that, as you said, muted the process, but you're not quite certain that that demand is there over the long run. Yeah,
I think it might be close to that. It's hard to say right now. The numbers right now on exports just aren't showing that level of exports in corn. Now, that doesn't mean that number's not going to pick up as we move through the marketing year, but we've gotten off to a pretty poor start on corn exports this year. Export inspections are down. You know, the September Census Bureau export numbers were down over year over year. So we've gotten off to somewhat of a slow start. It doesn't mean the numbers aren't going to be there. And I mean, the USDA said that, you know, they raised corn exports due to U.S. competitiveness and expanded Mexican imports due to poor sorghum harvest, you know, and a few other factors. But right now, that number seems a bit high to me, but it doesn't mean it won't occur.
Yeah, you write in the Farm Doc Daily article that we need to increase from the current export inspection projections from 24 million bushels per week to about 36 million per week to make it end up in the right place. That's no small feat. And then you go on and take a look at some of the other demand areas, ethanol, for instance.
Yeah, we're off to a pretty good start grinding corn for ethanol. Actually, we're ahead of what I would consider the pace USDA is currently projecting. I think it's 5.475 billion bushels. We're off to a good start. Gasoline demand's been a little bit higher year over year thus far through the marketing year, if you just look at the marketing year for corn. One of the issues is we really had strong ethanol exports last year, driven mostly by Brazil. That looks to be evaporating a bit. I don't know if we're going to have that kind of export number this year. We've seen exports in September drop significantly, and that's mostly Brazilian exports disappearing for us. So, but I think that number, that ethanol, that corn use for ethanol number, I think that's we're on track for that. I think that's the case where that consumption area could be solid. You know, it really is going to come down. We don't talk about it much, and I know a lot of market commentary people don't talk about it much, but feed and residual, it's a huge part of corn use, and we need it. We need those numbers. And while they've been increasing quarter over quarter, you know, and we've seen inventories in a lot of livestock sectors build, we need those numbers to be there. And, you know, that first grain stocks report, you know, which will come out in January, talking about the December 1st corn stocks, you know, if we get a surprise in that where we're seeing a lot more feed and residual use, you might see something, right? We might see a price run. Or if we see a change for some reason in the overall corn supply from the January final production report for 2017, I'm not sure we're going to see much backing off on that yield number. Usually that doesn't occur. So, you know, we might see something in the next few months, but right now the supply is hanging over the market, and we're going to see probably low and muted price moves for the foreseeable future.
For the year, USDA raised the feed and residual use by 75 million. The grain stocks will have to reflect a third to a half of that?
Somewhere in that range. It's going to have to be a really good number. All right. And when you think about that grain stocks report, you know, we're starting out at a really high carry-in. All right. So we've got high carry-in and a huge, huge production number. I mean, it's not a record due to the acreage reduction from last year, but there's a lot of corn out there. So the idea that we're feeding more corn, it's going to be important. We're going to have to see a really good grain stocks number in January.
Can't wait to see what you have to say on Thursday evening of this week and on Tuesday of next week.
I'm happy to be there.
All right. That's Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist, commodity marketing specialist here in the grains at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Amy Sage is now on the phone line. She's with the Andersons facility right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Amy. Thanks so much.
Good afternoon, Todd.
All right. So wrapped up here?
Almost.
For farming?
we're getting very, very close, all but done. But we do have a little bit left to come in here, and hopefully we can get a majority of that in before we get some weather possibly later this week with how the forecasts look. But all in all, we are wrapping things up and should be done by the end of the week, I would say.
Any good reason for soybeans to be down so sharply today?
I guess we had some noon forecasts improve for South America. Outside of that, I can't really give you anything too major, but we did break below some support levels, so that probably didn't help anything either with that forecast. But as the forecast changed for South America, then we could see this go back and forth a little bit too.
Basis levels for both corn and soybeans coming back into line?
Yeah, we're at that time of year, so as we see harvest kind of finish up and everything's tucked away, typically we see an improvement, and we are getting to that time frame where we are starting to see a little bit of that, both in corn and soybeans at this point.
And what are your bids for the day?
You bet. Going home tonight, we're 326 for corn, which is 16 under the Dease, 937 for soybeans, which is 37 under the Jan, and for wheat, we are 419.
Hey, Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Amy Sage is with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. Don't forget that you can pick up your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference on our website at willag.org or by dialing 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065, the Farm Assets Conference, a week and a day away in Normal, Illinois. The cost is just $35, and that includes the noon lunch. Now on the line with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast is Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, glad to be here, Todd.
So we had kind of a gray weekend, especially Sunday. Saturday not so bad here, but wet and gray on Sunday, cold. And I'm wondering, producers still have some crop to get out, maybe some anhydrous ammonia to put on. What will conditions be like for the next couple of weeks?
Well, as we look out from now through the end of the month, actually two distinct patterns across the Corn Belt as you go east of the Mississippi, including in that aisle. It's still, especially over the next 10 days, it's a wetter, cooler pattern. Not seeing any kind of, you know, excessive rainfall or anything that overall would really bog things down. But there will be a succession of frontal systems coming through, and with that will be some rain shower activity, and then also usher in some cooler temperatures, not like what we had back late last week, but we do see a slight cooler bias across the warmer bias across the western belt, and also a drier bias as well. So Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Dakotas, Kansas, anywhere west of the river where there still is some harvesting that needs to be accomplished, they'll have a favorable weather here coming up from now.
And then when you look into South America and talk about conditions there, they're in the midst of their growing season.
Yeah, down in South America, bottom line is that for Brazil, we see no red flags at the present time. Over the past week, there's been improvement in soil moisture across some of the drier soybean acreage in northern Brazil. More rain is on the way over the next couple of weeks across that same area, as well as southern Brazil. And overall, the next 2 weeks looks to feature near normal rainfall totals across the Brazil soybean belt and coffee in Brazil. Now, for Argentina, they're in good shape at this stage of the game. They are going to be trending drier as we go from now through the end of the month. And that's something to keep an eye on going into December. It's not of any immediate concern, but something to keep an eye on and something less than ideal across South America at the present time.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse from Chicago, Illinois. Helps us wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.